Well, I've got to take better cues because I heard you clap and I popped up on stage. I'm thinking, hey, it's my turn. Get off. What's this reprise stuff? It's good to be here. I realized that a few weeks ago, the last time I spoke, I left some of you in major trauma because I didn't answer an incredible theological question about the cat. And yes, we kept the cat. And for those of you that weren't here and blessed to hear about my problems, I was talking about how we have intimacy with God and God wants to know all the details of our life, and that my wife brought a cat home without us talking about it. And I was greeted by my kids and they said, "Dad, can we keep the cat?" And began to weep. And so being the wonderful father and husband, I said, "Yes." And we kept the cat. But it ran away. It was quite the object lesson on prayer because it forced my kids, who had been growing up in a pastor's family, to pray, and they began to pray that we would find the cat. And a friend, not a neighbor, a half mile away, saw an ad. Somebody said, "Found cat," and that friend, who's no longer a friend, by the way, returned the cat to us. And my four-year-old said, "Dad, we know you didn't want the cat, but God wanted us to have it." All of a sudden, he's a theologian. Yeah. Just last week, he asked me if God wore boxers or briefs. Anyway, today's the second part of a series that Pastor Rick started last week called Managing Life's Manageable. The idea here is that there are some things that are out of our control that we can't manage, and yet there are some things that we can manage, that we can control. Pastor Rick talked last week about managing our mouths and that we can control the words that come out of our mouth. And today it's my privilege to talk about managing our relationships, that there are some things within a relationship that we can manage, that we can control. If you were here a few weeks ago at the end of the year, Pastor Rick had you write down what the thing that you were most thankful for last year and your greatest concern for the coming year. And the number one response of one's greatest concern was relationships. Now, if you'll look at your notes, you'll see that I've really put together an unbelievable message. But at the top of it, you see a word there that says relational status. And I've gone ahead and taken the privilege to create my own little hierarchy or progression of relationships, saying that relationships, we have many acquaintances, maybe dozens to hundreds. And then beyond acquaintances, we have friends. Friends, oftentimes, the key word here that I would think about would be circumstance. We're friends by circumstance. We either work with them, they're neighbors. Maybe we would even put some people that we call good friends into this category. But the highest category is what I'm calling valued others. I'd even like for you to circle that, because that's what we're going to go after today. Valued others. I want to give you five investments that I think that we need to do if we're going to have significant, healthy relationships. These investments we can manage. We can control these. If you also look in your notes, you'll see that there's a cost involved, a relational investment. With acquaintance, it's usually low, friend, moderate. But with a valued other, these investments are high. You might even write the word tough next to it, because these aren't easy. My dad used to say, "Boy, secret to marriage is you deposit faster than your wife can withdraw." I just did that in a southern voice, too. I just realized that my dad's not southern. kind of sounds like a dad thing. Anyway, also he was referring to finances. I like the principle about withdrawing and depositing, that all relationships go through a withdrawal. They go through a crisis withdrawal, a conflict withdrawal. But if there's enough deposited, if there's enough invested in the relationship, when the withdrawals happen, and they will, the relationship won't go bankrupt. The Bible has a lot to say about relationships. We're created to be in relationships with others. Loneliness was not God's intent. And we're going through our kids at the beginning of the year, the creation stories. We're reading the Bible, and we're noticing that when God created everything, he said it is good. He created man, he said it is not good.
He's alone.
God created Eve. And Adam said, all right, now we're talking. And God intended for these relationships to be deep. Look in your notes there in Ecclesiastes 4. It says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up, but pity, and circle the word pity, but pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Proverbs 27 says, as iron sharpens iron, so people can improve each other. That we are richer, deeper, more meaningful people when we have valued others in our lives. You'll see the return on our investment of what we put into relationship based on this next passage, 2 Corinthians 9. Let's read this together. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. You see, valued relationships take work. What we put into them, we will get out of them. So I like the word investment, because an investment is intentional. An investment is strategic. You calculate the cost of an investment. Valued relationships are not accidental. They just don't happen. They take work. They're made, they're built, they're developed, they're nurtured. Left alone, relationships will atrophy. They'll fall apart. They'll limp along and lose their valued status. And we've all been a part of relationships that have happened that way. What I would like for you to do as we walk through these five investments, I would like to put a really practical spin on this. And I want to challenge you to be thinking of somebody in your life that is in that valued other category. It could be a parent-child relationship, it could be husband-wife, it could be a best valued friend. Be thinking of a person as we talk about these investments and how you might be able to make these investments in your life. Let's look at these five. The first investment that I want to talk about that valued relationships need is when we make an investment of interest. Interest. And what I'm talking about there is to be really other-centered, to give interest to one another. Look what it says in the Scriptures, Proverbs 18:1. People who don't get along with others are only interested in themselves. Philippians 2:4. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. This week when I went to the bookstore to look under, just perusing the books on relationships, the heading that these books fell under were self-help. Now, when you open up God's Word and you see what He has to say about relationships, if He had a heading, it would be others. That we give to others, and in return, we reap. Now, I didn't have room in your notes, and under each of these investments, except for the last investment, I'm going to give you two action steps that you're going to need to write in the margins. Sorry that you've got to do a little more work here. but we ran out of room. The first action step under make an investment of interest is ask questions. Asking good questions takes genuine interest. People love to talk about their valued subject, their most important subject, which is usually themselves. And good questions are questions that bring out the best in the other person. They evoke feelings. They reveal and challenge character. Questions are to a valued relationship what food is to a body. Relationships can't survive without questions. And yet, something has happened in our relationship where they begin to plateau. Have you noticed this? They just kind of go along. We're with these valued others, and they just kind of hit a peak. And it's because we're not asking questions. We're not digging in. The Proverbs tell us, and this isn't in your notes, that a wise person will draw out from the other person's well. Asking good questions. I tell people when they're newly married or getting married that during this position of life that you're in, it's very romantic. And if you're not careful, that romance becomes routine. And as that plateaus, that routine moves to a roommate situation and you're living the life that God didn't intend. Asking questions digs into the interest of other people. And I want you to know that just because we spend time with our valued others does not mean that we're asking questions. This week I was in Joplin, Missouri for 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. I had flown there to speak at a National Youth Workers Conference, and I had, instead of renting me a car, I had a chaperone. 38-year-old pastor of a small church in Joplin, Missouri, and we spent 48 hours together. And I say we spent it together. We were never apart. I mean, he didn't sleep in my hotel room, but he was with me all the time. He never left my side. I'd get on the phone and I'd whisper to my wife. She said, what are you whispering? He's right here, you know. And you know what? A 48 hour spending, I know everything about him. I know about half of the people in the 42,000 person city of Joplin. I know all about his kids. I know about his church. I know about the elders that call him to wash the church van. I know the price of his home, the best places to go cow tipping, the problems he's had with his digestive tract. I know everything about him. You know what, folks? He did not ask me one question. The whole time we were together, he didn't ask me one question. And then I get on the phone and I call my 7-year-old. First thing she does, ask me a question. Daddy, did you buy me anything? No. That's still a question. Okay? The second action step I'd like for you to write down under the investment of interest still is not only asking questions, but then listening. Listening. We give other people our interest when we listen to them. When my wife saw this in my notes, she said, oh, you're speaking on that, huh? She kind of rolled her eyes back, which really means that, oh, isn't it nice that you're teaching on something you have no real life actual experience in? The Bible gives us a definition of listening. James 1:19 says, everyone be quick to listen and slow to speak, and therefore the result is you'll be slow to become angry. Quick to listen. Circle those words. Quick to listen. Sometimes we say, I've heard everything you said. Oh, you want me to put the paper down? Okay. Some of you that have kids, you know this. Your kids have grabbed your face. Look at me, they say, you know. They just, because even little children want that eye contact. Folks, we communicate so much of value of another person when we look them in the eyes, when our body language says, I'm interested, I value you. How about the people that when they talk to you, they look beyond you? You know, they just kind of look, it's kind of a sociological phenomenon, kind of looking beyond. You know what I'm talking about in Haiti. Yes, oh, yeah. We want these people branded on their forehead. Bad listener, you just kind of steer clear. These are the same people that don't wait, they'll ask a question, but they don't wait for the answer. Right? What's happening? How's life going? Well, you know, it's going pretty good. But are you leaving? They just kind of walk away. If you're brave enough, I challenge you to go to this valued other that you're thinking about and ask them, do I ask good questions? What are the questions that would bring out the richness in you? Am I a good listener? The second investment that I like to talk about as we look at valued others is making the investment of acceptance. Acceptance says that my attention that I give you isn't conditional. I'm accepting you for who you are, and therefore you get my attention. The investment of acceptance. Romans 15:7 says, accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. Why do we accept one another? Because we're all different. We're all different, and God created us this way. This type of acceptance says, I love you, period. Parents, listen to this, because being a youth worker, I see a lot of conditional love, a lot of conditional acceptance. I love you if. I love you when. I love you because. That's not acceptance. That's conditional. When we have valued others, we accept them for the people God created them to be. And some of us as parents, we look at our children and we think that they're a blank slate. We think they've got our genetic code, and therefore we can create them to be the person in our dreams. And yet we forget that God has a part of this imprint as well. And that God may have a different creation in mind than we do. And sometimes that bothers us and it disappoints us, and we begin to distance ourselves from our kids. I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but you know, I really want my kids to be athletes. I do. I mean, if they went pro, that would be that would be wonderful. I'd love to be their agent. But I grew up playing sports all my life, and I kind of never really made it big, and I want to live my dreams out with them. And my first child, she hates sports. My 4-year-old, although he's got a lot of energy, he really hasn't taken grasp of what I think God's will for his life is. We have all girls on our neighborhood, and Cody plays with girls all the time. All the time. House, dress up, all kinds of stuff. I come home from work and say, hey, buddy, let's play catch. And there's my boy in drag, you know. I'm glad you can laugh at my pain. The action step that I want you to write down under the investment of acceptance is two words here, to promote differences. Promote differences. God has made us different. Promote them. Because think about this, folks. What is our option when the valued other is different? What are our options? Well, we can either accept it or we can try to change it. And people don't change until they've been accepted. Promote differences. We can either change it or accept it. And we got to accept it because people don't change until they feel accepted. The second word that I'd like you to write down under the investment of acceptance is not only to promote differences, but to also forgive. It's a tough action step. We don't have the time to go in depth on this, but I know based on the people that I interact with that you can't adequately accept others if you haven't forgiven them. This is a huge issue in this unconditional acceptance. You cannot accept someone if you haven't forgiven them. It's tough. The Bible makes it very clear about our gift of forgiveness that we get from God. It's available. It restores us to God. It's a free gift. But it's also clear that our forgiveness is conditional on our forgiveness of others. Let's read this passage together. It's a tough one. Matthew 6. But if you don't forgive others, your Father in heaven will not forgive your sin. I want you to chew on that one for a little bit. If we stopped here, many of us would be incredibly depressed. So let's move on. You can think through that one a little bit more later. When it comes to valued relationships, not only do we have the investment of interest and of acceptance, but the third investment is the investment of experience. And when I talk about having experiences with one another, I'm talking about both positive and negative experiences. That these experiences add to the depth and the richness of a relationship. Why is it that when you talk to most people about their greatest memories, they think of family vacations? Because those were rich relational experiences, both positive and sometimes negative. The words that I want you to write down that we're going to talk about under experience are laughter. That would be the positive experience. And comfort would be what happens when pain hits. Let's take a look at laughter. Now, I realize that there's not a lot of verses in the Bible that say, thou shall laugh. But the Bible does talk a lot about joy, which I think is a source of where laughter comes from. And joy is having a right relationship with God and that horizontal relationship and having a right relationship with others and that vertical relationship. Look at this passage in Proverbs 15:30. It says, bright eyes gladden the heart. Good news puts fat on the bones. Not sure what that means, but kind of a nice verse. Just if you're struggling with your New Year's diet like I am, you can just say, you know, I've got a lot of good news lately, is all I can say, you know. And it's very biblical. Proverbs 15:13, it says, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. Laughter is a rich experience. People ask me all the time, all over the country, they say, what is the secret to the success of Saddleback? I mean, it's one of the fastest growing churches in the nation. What's the secret? Well, there's only one. And it's that God has his hand on this place. God has done something incredible on this place. It's God's hand. It's God's work. Now, style-wise, we have kind of a different style. We have a pastor who is a little wild, who likes to laugh and likes to smile and has one of the loudest laughs known to humanity. And that vibrates all the way down through our staff and through our people. And this is a good place to be. I know that when I speak, I like to use humor. And yet, I get criticized every time I speak. You know, Jesus didn't use humor. We don't have any passages of Jesus laughing. and that's, you know, we don't have passages of Jesus laughing. But the Bible tells us that Jesus was 100% God and 100% man. And I don't know any humans who have never laughed. I don't. I mean, picture Jesus with 12 guys for 3 years camping. Okay? Walking around. Tell me that there was not laughter happening. We have created Jesus as so smug and somber and serious. And I picture them on the, you know, the roadside or camping out. The other guys are out having a mud fight. Jesus is probably left cleaning up the dishes. And, you know, he's being the ultimate servant. And all of a sudden he stands up. James overthrows Peter. A mud ball hits Jesus in the face. Everybody stops. The Son of God has been hit. Now, the Jesus I know, I don't think he says, "Thou hast hitteth me in the face." Come on. He probably wiped that thing off there, throwing it right back at it. And maybe I just want to believe that because I see a rich, laughing, friendly, accepting Christ. That maybe, yeah, he laughed so hard he blew milk out his nose. I don't know. I do know this, that if I had the privilege to sit with everybody in our church one-on-one for an extended period of time, and I would ask the right questions and listen, I would uncover a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, a lot of frustration, some bitterness. And you know what? If you ask the right questions of me, you'd probably uncover some of the same things. That our world is kind of a rough place. And there's something about laughter that gives people a little lift, a little hope. I think sour-faced Christians are a bad testimony to Christianity. I know that for me, laughter's a tool that I use to reach people, not only in speaking, but in life. You know, working with high school kids, I've got to use it. You know, I've got some kids that, you know, sit in the back. They don't pay attention when I speak. They're forced to come to church. The only way to reach them is through laughter. There's a kid who used to be in my group dressed in all black. He'd sit in the back. Every once in a while, he'd bring a friend. Never paid attention. Black boots, chains, black spiked hair, makeup, the whole bit. And I'd always go up to him and try to tease him and stick their hand and talk to him. I'd say, "Hey, let's hang out sometime." Yeah, their laughter was a little louder. And I say, "Yeah, you look like my uncle, but no, I don't think so." But I asked week after week after week, and finally, this one kid brought his buddy and said, "Hey, let's hang this Friday." "All right, let's hang. Okay. Take you to a nice dinner. There's Denny's down the street, and we can, you know, we can do that." And they go, no, we don't eat. They say, 10 o'clock, and they gave me directions to this place in Huntington Beach that they hang out on Friday night. And I'm kind of going, "Well, how do I dress? I mean, I'm pretty much the Gap poster child. I don't have chain. Well, I have a bike chain. I can wear a bike chain. 10 o'clock, bring a backpack, be there." I show up, Huntington Beach, 10 o'clock, Friday night, with a backpack. These guys have those two guys, and they have about six other guys that look exactly like them. They were made in the garage or something. I'm not sure. They just look. And they've got backpack and a pickup truck filled with tennis balls. And we put all the tennis balls in the backpack. We hop this fence. We're in this construction yard, okay? Two-story houses that hadn't been finished. And the object of what we were going to do is run around and throw tennis balls at one another. Okay. Now I'm thinking, "Lord, okay, I want to reach these guys, but, you know, I also enjoy my life." But we get into it a little bit. We split up into teams. And I'm having the time of my life. I really am. I mean, I am having so much fun because these kids, this is a stereotype, but they were the non-athletic type. They could not throw the ball at all, okay? I grew up playing sports. I played baseball for 12 years. I was a catcher. I have a fairly good arm. I am throwing the ball going, "You don't pay attention when I speak on Sunday morning." Boom! You know, I'm nailing them, running around. All of a sudden, I make my own team. It's me against all of them, okay? I'm in the second story throwing down at them, just going, had I known, if I'd have known about this in seminary, I'd have majored in tennis ball war. I mean, it was great. It was great. One time I'm hiding in the second story, and all of a sudden, a security car drives in to the construction yard. Now, I may sound adventurous, but at that point, I get really scared. You know, I'm hiding behind a chimney, visualizing, you know, the register. Youth pastor arrested, you know, that kind of thing. And this one kid, Dan, I'll never forget this, he steps out, looks around, he throws the tennis ball at the car. Boom! Hits the side of the car. First thing the kid had hit all night. And at that point, I get out of there. I race down there. I hop the fence. I don't say goodbye. I say, I've ministered to these guys long enough. You know, I go home. I get upstairs. I'm looking out the window, you know, and then he got them. Sunday morning, every single one of those kids showed up to church. They sat in the front row. When I got up to speak, they reached into their pocket and pulled out a tennis ball. I wish I had some great ending like, you know, one of them was Billy Graham or, you know. Two or three of those kids stuck around, gave their life to the Lord over a period of time. But, folks, there's something rich. There's something meaningful. There's something empty in our life that, you know, laughter and joy and celebration and adventure and play, that's an experience. Kind of on the flip side, but yet as highly intense, is the emotion of pain. And the action step that I had you write down was comfort. I think experiences become rich when we share in the pain of a valued relationship and we display comfort. See, no one enjoys pain, but pain happens. And pain is an open door for us to walk into a valued other and give comfort. The comfort that we give, which is a thrill to me, is not comfort that I have to generate on my own. It's comfort that God gives to me. Look at this passage in 2 Corinthians 1. It says, God is the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. He comforts us in our trouble. Why? So that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. For just as the sufferings of Christ flow over into our lives, so also through Christ our comfort overflows. That's good news. You know what that tells me? That tells me that pain is not the time where we walk away. Pain is the time where we run to. We don't have to run with verses. We don't have to run with six happy hops to healing. We run and give our presence. Allow God to work in and through us to provide that comfort. Those are rich experiences. Well, how do you make those experiences happen? Laughter and comfort. I really thought through this the last couple of days. How can I provide something practical? And all I can come up with is that it takes time. These things take time. And if you're too busy to have these rich experiences with your valued others, you're busier than God intends you to be. And you're probably outside of His will, and I know that's a difficult thing to say. I believe in quality time, but I support quantity time, because it's within quantity time that things happen. In youth ministry, we try to program things. We program weekly meetings. We program camps. We program my messages. We program all this stuff. And yet when I get together with kids that have graduated from our ministry over the last 15 years, and I ask them, what is it that you remember most about being in our ministry? It's not the program stuff. And you know what? I want it to be the program stuff. I mean, we work hard for this. I want them to say, Doug, what I really remember is the way you took a little bit of humor and mixed it with God's truth and gave us action steps that I apply every day of my life, and it's changed my life. That's what I remember. No kid has ever said that to me. You know what they say is, I remember that one time we were at Coco's and I poured iced tea down your pants. I remember that time we were in Mexicali and we got a flat tire in the church van and it was jacked up and you let me help you change it, and the semi-truck came by and blew the van off the jack and almost crushed your legs off. I tell my friends, he didn't cuss. I remember that time my parents were going through a divorce and you and Kathy let me stay the night at your house. I remember that time my grandpa died and I didn't know who to call, and I called you and you prayed with me over the phone. Remember when you sat on the back of the houseboat with me till midnight and introduced me to Jesus? Experiences like this that are rich happen in the midst of time. The fourth investment that we make with valued others is the investment of honor. The investment of honor. Philippians 2 says, when you do things, do not let selfishness, there's that word again, or pride be your guide. Instead, be humble and give more honor. Circle those three words. Give more honor to others than yourself. Romans 12:10. Love each other like brothers and sisters. Give each other more honor than you want for themselves. Now, those of you in the first few rows here, give me a definition of honor. What does it mean to honor someone? To revere, to respect. What else? Put their desires above yours. Good. Listen to them. you've said the two action steps I'm going to give you. I'm going to use different words. One is respect. And second word that I think honors another is to cherish. Respect and cherish. A definition I got out of a book said, you hold others in high esteem. In a book called The Gift of Honor, they had an interesting quote. It says, the lower the value we attach to a person, the easier we can justify dishonoring them by negative words or treating them with disrespect. Honor says that I become my kid's cheerleader. Honor says that when I look at a valued friend, I celebrate in their successes without being jealous. That they did it better than me, or that they have a higher paying job, or they got a promotion, or new material things. That I celebrate in their successes. That's honor. Jesus makes it clear that honor is more than words. It's more than just giving lip service. It's actions as well. He says in Matthew 15, these people show honor to me with words, but their hearts are far from me. Respect and cherish. That I honor my children when I show them respect. Think through that, parents. What does that look like? I honor my valued friends when I show them respect. In marriage, the men that I've talked to, what I realize is that men, they want to be respected. Ladies, they don't want to be reconstructed. They want to be respected. Now, what about cherish? Well, when I cherish my children, I honor them. When I cherish my valued friends, I honor them. In marriages, one of the things that I found out is that women, they don't want to be respected. I mean, they do want to be respected, but they want to be cherished first. They want to be cherished. Men, they want to be cherished, not changed. Men want to be respected, not reconstructed. And if you think about it, it's kind of an evil, ugly cycle. Is that it says, I can't respect him until he cherishes me. And it's hard for me to cherish her until she respects me. Who starts? You do. You do. That's honor. The fifth investment is the investment of faith. Investment of faith. Faith says that with my children, with my spouse, with my valued others, that I bring Jesus into the relationship. We have a lot to learn from one another. Look at this passage in Romans 1:12. It says, I mean that I want us to help each other with the faith that we have. Your faith will help me and my faith will help you. That's what fellowship is. There's something rich and sweet about that, that we learn from each other. You don't just come here and learn from who's ever teaching. We learn from other Christians as well. It means parents, with your kids, you look for opportunities to teach them about God. In your marriage, you create opportunities to pray together. Is that tough? Yeah, that's tough. You create opportunities where you can share the new things that you're learning. In your friendships, you encourage and support one another. The action step, I only got one for you to write down here, and that's to share Christ. The investment of faith says that I'm going to share Christ. With those that are believers, it's a little bit easier. And yet I know there's some people here who, with their valued other, they've never even talked about the greatest thing that's happened in their life. They've never shared Christ with them. And partly that confuses me a little bit, in that if I had the cure to AIDS, I would shout it to the world. Your life has been changed. Share Christ. But when I get into people's lives and I say, what is it that keeps you from telling them about Jesus? What do they say? Tell me. Of course, it's not you. It's a neighbor or somebody. What do they say? Fear. Fear. I'm afraid. Afraid to be rejected. Afraid I won't have the answers. What if they ask me about prehistoric dinosaurs? You know, and were they in the Bible? That type of thing. What if they ask me a tough theological question, like how many angels can fit in a phone booth? I don't know all the answers. And so that fear then paralyzes us, and we don't care about Jesus. But with our valued others, the investment of faith is that I will. And what I like to do is I like to challenge people to look at John 9. In John 9, Jesus has just healed a blind man. And the blind man walks throughout the city and people see that there's a guy that was once blind and now he sees, and they find out that Jesus healed him. And then they start asking him all these questions. Who is the guy that healed you? Is he a sinner? Who did he say he was? Who do you think he is? And I love the blind man's response. It's so beautiful. Let's look at this. The blind man answered, I don't know if he's a sinner. one thing I do know, I was blind, and now I see this. That's it. That's how you share Christ. You tell them, I don't have all the answers. All I know about my own life is that I used to be blind, and now I see. My life used to be out of control, and now I see. My life was so far away from God, God got a hold of my heart, and now I'm walking to the cross, and I live under the shadow of the cross. I don't have all the answers. All I know is I was blind, and now I see. That's sharing Christ. I think the best witness in the world, the best witness to the non-believing world is quality relationships. Quality relationships with God and quality relationships with other people. Jesus told his disciples, he says, other people will know that you are my followers. How? By the love you have for one another. People will know that you're Christians by the way you love one another. In your notes there, I left a blank for you. Remember this. Because as I challenge you to make these investments and challenge myself to make these investments in valued others, I want us all to remember that God has made these investments in us. God has made these investments in us. The investment of interest. God is interested in us. He hears our prayers. The Bible tells us that He knows everything about us. He knew us before we were even born. God has made these investments in us. The investment of acceptance. God accepts us as we are. We don't have to change before we come to God. God changes us when we get there. He's made these investments to us. The investment of experience. We have a journey with Him, a journey of pain, a journey of joy. But He's there with us. The investment of honor. God honors us. How does He honor us? He gives us a new name. He calls us children of God. And the investment of faith is that we share in a relationship with God through faith. We don't share in religion. We share in a relationship. So as I'm up here challenging all of us to make these investments in valued others, I also want us to remember that God's already made these investments in us. That's good news. Some of you here today may be thinking, Doug, I like this, but these are a little tough. I can't give something I don't have. These investments don't flesh out with who I am. And if that's true, I'd like to challenge you to invite Jesus Christ into your life, to change your nature, to make you a new creation so that you have the strength and the power and the wisdom, that you have God's power working in you to make these investments. Look at this last passage. Because by looking at this, we see that we can't give love first, that God loves us first. The true love originates in God. Let's read this together, 1 John 4. We love because God first loved us. We should love each other because love comes from God. Everyone who loves has become God's child and knows God. I put a little gift together for you. I realize that most of us, when we walk away from here, we go, oh, that was nice, because they were teaching, that was nice, and then we tend by Monday to forget. I put a little card together, and on it it says, making wise investments in others. Do we have it up there? And I've taken your notes and I've summarized them. I have all the investments with the passage next to us and then the action steps. And I want to challenge you to do this for 1 week. I want to challenge you that you'll look at this every day before you spend time with a valued other. And if you'll take that challenge on your little welcome card, will you just drop it in the offering and just say, Doug, I'm in. I'll take the challenge. I'm in. And I want to pray for you. I'm not going to send you anything. I'm not going to visit you, but I do want to pray for you. And these are going to be outside as you leave. They're in boxes. If you could please take one. We had 10,000 printed up, and last night's service took about 5,000, and there was about 3,000 people here. So, Saturday night service is a selfish service, and this is really where the quality people are. So if you could take one, that would be a wonderful thing. Put it in your car, and that's, I'm putting the dashboard in my car, and before I walk in the house, I'm going to think, okay, what investment can I make tonight? I hope you take me up on this challenge. Let's pray together. God, thanks for your love. We don't deserve it, and yet you love us in ways that we don't even understand. Your love for us is so great and so rich. Lord, I pray that we would be different people as a result of today. God, thank you that you have brought valued others into our lives. You've entrusted them to us. Lord, may we be faithful in how we love them. Thank you, God, that your love started it all. Thank you that you love us not because of what we do, but because of who we are. We pray in the name of Jesus.